A little over a month ago, the Egyptian Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities announced that it had found a new tomb in Saqqara. Oh, well, a new-to-us tomb. It's an ancient tomb. It's said to house the first fifth dynasty pharaoh's, Userkaf's son, Userefre. And this tomb is said to be noteworthy because it has the largest door to nowhere, those fake doors that are a common feature in Egyptian tombs. This one's 14 foot tall, 3 foot wide, and pink granite. It is impressive. It's nothing to be scoffed at. However, it's not the most impressive feature of the find, in my opinion, and the most impressive thing to come out of the find, in my opinion, would just happen to be the fact that we are getting two different stories from official sources on the nature of this find. So strap yourselves in, grab something to drink, kick your feet up, get ready to hear me mispronounce some more names. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Earlier this year, the Zahi Hawass Foundation for Archaeology and Heritage and the Egyptian Supreme Council of Archaeology found the tomb of Userefre in Saqqara, one of the oldest places for dynastic burials in ancient Egypt. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the feature on this site that the media is the most hyped about is that large granite door to nowhere. And this is a pretty common feature in ancient Egyptian tombs. As a matter of fact, if you're into alternate history or ancient Egyptian history, you probably are well aware of, like, them talking about throwing open the gates of iron, or the doors of iron, to let the blessed dead into the Duat, their version of heaven. There's the fake doors that are in the Queen's Chamber shafts. There's also just, this is a really common feature in the tombs. This is a place for people to, like, leave an offering for the deceased that they were, like, trying to give them some bread or wine or whatever. They put it in front of a fake door, and it was also a way for the dead to be able to, like, facilitate their movement from point A to point B. If you want them to get from here to there, put a fake door there. So this is a real common feature. It's interesting, but it's not like, it's cool that it's the biggest one they found. But what's noteworthy to me about this is really two things. Like I said, one thing, it's part of the find, and the other thing is just, like, the way that we're being, that's being reported to us. And I suppose there's one other thing I should get out of the way really quick. It's really, really interesting that the first pharaoh of the fifth dynasty didn't bury his kid in the pyramid. It's just kind of an odd little thing that, you know, all of a sudden he just, you know, why would I care if my kid went to heaven or not? It's almost like the pyramids weren't exactly being used as tombs back then. It's almost like they were being used for something else altogether different. But I digress. Let's talk about the stuff that I'm actually here to talk about. Now, the first thing that I want to really get into is that the fact the tomb had the statues of the pharaoh Djoser and his wife and 10 daughters inside the tomb. These statues were presumably moved there before they finished burying Userefre, according to Egyptologists, and Djoser was from the 3rd dynasty, Userefre and Userkaf, the 5th dynasty. To quote the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities, archaeologist and former Minister of Archaeology, Dr. Zahi Hawass, indicated that the mission was found inside the cemetery, and for the first time a statue of King Djoser, his wife, and 10 daughters. Preliminary studies have proven that these were located inside a room next to King Djoser's pyramid, and that these statues were moved to the tomb of Prince Userefre during the late ages. This mission will continue to find out why these statues were moved from their original place here. Now, the inclusion of the statues of Djoser, his wife, and 10 daughters in a tomb that's not his is pretty interesting, considering that these were taken from another tomb and put there. That's what they said, right? Now, the step pyramid of Djoser, when they dug it up and excavated it the first time, it had a whole bunch of those vases that Matt and Chris and Adam and Ben like to talk about, right? Those vases that are, like, made to higher standards than we would expect to see. This place had a bunch of those of all different varieties, some of them not very good standards, some of them very high standards. A lot of these had the cartouches of old pharaohs, some of them pre-dynastic, like leaders in Egypt and stuff, were put on these things, and they were buried in Djoser's pyramid. And it's like they were this effigy of old leaders being included in the step pyramid of Djoser. And again, here in the pyramid of Userefre, the tomb of Userefre, that's not a pyramid, we see the same kind of thing done with Djoser. They have included some sort of effigy of his, and they've taken it presumably from their tombs, which would, and again, I've thought this in the past, that they probably have taken those vases from that if we found in Djoser's pyramid, they probably taken those from the graves of the earlier pharaohs and whatnot. I think they were putting them there to like gain power or something, as I've talked about in the past. As I've spoken about in the past, I do believe that the ancient Egyptians used the pyramids as like a resurrection apparatus, part of a ritual that was intended to resurrect the soul. But no one pyramid was ever intended to, none of the big ones anyway, were ever intended to hold a body for long. They were intended to like use the body as part of this this replication on the ground of what they believe happened in the underworld and in the sky. And as above, so below, as they like to say, right? And in this case, I believe that they would use these pyramids. There's like 42 stations or whatever in the Egyptian underworld, 42 gates. It depends on which dynasty you're talking about, too. This changed over time. But we'll discuss the changes over time here in a little bit as well. That's going to come up. But it's an interesting thing to consider that the idea of these different places being not built to house one body, but built to imbue spiritual power to numerous royal corpses over time. And this would honestly explain like why they put so much effort into these, and why they, because it wasn't just one for them, it was one for their entire dynasty, it was one for their entire people. But you know, this is just my personal opinion. However, it's not entirely without merit. I mean, according to these dudes at Oxford, while the term usurpation is often found in Egyptological literature applying to the seizure of the royal throne, usurpation applies equally to the appropriation and reuse of royal monuments, and specifically, in this chapter, to the reuse of tombs in the Valley of the Kings. A number of New Kingdom royal tombs, almost one in four, were appropriated and partly or wholly reused during the New Kingdom and later. This chapter surveys the tombs known to have been usurped and examines the very reasons for their appropriation. Well, there's two things about this that seem very counterintuitive to me. The first one is the way that they're disrespecting their ancestors. That seems like the kind of thing that you see happen a couple of times when like money got tight and they started looting tombs. It's not the kind of thing that's like part and parcel of their normal operating procedure. From what you would gather reading their literature, it looks like they honored these kinds of stuff, but you look closer and not exactly. The other thing that seems really counterintuitive to me about this, even more counterintuitive, is if you're burying somebody that you love or you're planning your own burial, why would you choose a tomb that was found? Like, this was a place that was discovered and looted, and so they why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. So it seems really weird to me that the way that ancient Egyptians appropriated each other's stuff this way, and to be honest with you, I have to believe, personally, I believe that there was they had a belief in a transference of spiritual power, that they believed that you would borrow, in this case, by Userkaf bringing in for his son Userefre all of these statues from the powerful King Djoser, he was able, in his mind, to bring in some of his resurrective power into his son's afterlife. That's my personal opinion. But, of course, you know, that's just Dan's personal opinion. What does he know? He's just an electrician. Now, before we discuss the other big thing that I find interesting, there is one noteworthy artifact that really isn't getting the press that it should, in my opinion. There was a large red granite altar found in the tomb with a list of sacrifices engraved on it. Now, the list hasn't been published yet, probably hasn't even been fully translated, but this is really cool. Now, it's a little over 3 feet across. It's not a small piece of stone, but what's really interesting to me is the way that it's got this list on there. From what I've seen, normally we get these kinds of lists from like records. We don't get them just like recorded on the artifact that it was like the sacrificial stone itself, the place that they made the offerings itself. This is really cool. So it'll be interesting to see, because there's, I mean, presumably no middleman, right? It's just like you put two ducks here, you write two ducks, and there's nobody else to translate this to a different piece of stone 2 generations later. So that's pretty interesting. I'll be waiting to see what the translation has to say when it comes out. And again, I do think this is the kind of thing that doesn't get the press that it deserves. And it's frustrating. I'm hoping that we get more info on it, but there's a real problem with ancient Egypt, with Egyptology in this regards. There's a lot of shit there. There's just a lot of stuff there. And Mark Lehner and Zahi Hawass kind of did this. I don't know if they were the first ones, but they sure as fuck did it a lot. They're just lazy. And so you'll get these papers that have like 20 different sites all lumped together because, well, they were just different quarries on the Giza Plateau and other noteworthy sites. It's like, well, fuck it. Show me a picture of one of them. You don't get that. So I saw this in my research for my last video. I couldn't really find a good image of, I couldn't find any images of this quarry that exists on paper. So anyway, my point here is that I'm hoping that we get more information on this altar, but I'm also a little bit afraid that it's the kind of thing you might just have to go to the Cairo Museum on a Saturday when they happen to have it out. And man, that's irritating. Now, when this site was first discovered, Egyptologist Dr. Yosef Wegner, one of the first archaeologists excavating the site, went on Fox News and said that he thought that it was from the Abydos dynasty. Now, he said this was before it was announced as Userkaf's son, but the difference in time is staggering. Now, the Abydos dynasty is said to be a short-lived dynasty of kind of usurper type of royals that hung out in Abydos between the 15th and 16th dynasty, right in there, right? It's kind of hypothetical. They're debated. It's not 100% that these guys existed. Dr. Yosef Wegner is of the opinion that they did. He was involved in the big find about 10 years ago that really drove the Abydos dynasty home. But my point here is that it's kind of interesting that we're getting really vastly different information. The Abydos dynasty between the 15th and 16th, like I said, Userkaf is from the 5th dynasty, the first pharaoh of the 5th dynasty. We're talking like 900 years here, okay? The differences that are going to be in that tomb are staggering, all right? We're getting two different stories. As a matter of fact, there's more evidence that we're getting two different stories. When you look at the information that they gave us on the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities Facebook page, they say that it was a purely Egyptian ran mission, right? Like that it was just Egyptians that were doing the find. But this guy's clearly an American, right? He's not an Egyptian. He's clearly an American. But you can know why they made that little bit of bullshit up, right? That's clearly just like this national pride thing like this. We've seen that before.
Egyptians,
yeah,
were the builders.
You can build a pyramid, you can do anything.
Yeah!
I cannot believe I'm entering the Sphinx.
All right, let's see if there's any hidden gold. Zaya, I just see an empty hole.
Then I need you to give a statement right now. I need a statement.
All right, Zaya, there was nothing inside the Sphinx.
Have you you've never heard of that before?
No, and this is not true.
What do you mean it's not true? I mean, this it is, just, I'm getting this off of...
It never happened at
okay,
all.
Okay, I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying this is something that's referred to.
I never heard about it. It is not true. It has not existed at all.
Even if it doesn't exist, the myth of it exists.
I don't... Listen, Joel, why do I have to go to a myth? Of people
but
create is, stories.
If you go to Wikipedia,
I don't care about Wikipedia.
I understand.
I care about what I see in my eyes as an archaeologist or a philologist.
No, but the big deal here to me is that Professor Wegner, Dr. Wegner, is an Egyptologist who's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania in their Middle Eastern Languages and Culture department. The guy is... He's a professor of Egyptology. The idea that he mistook some site for 900 years apart, 10 dynasties apart, when there's a differences in architecture, there's differences in hieroglyphs, massive differences. It's absurd. I mean, honestly, that's an absurd thing. It either says that their entire field of Egyptology is just bullshit, and these just make stuff up as they go, or it says that we're getting fed a line of shit in this case, and I tend to believe the latter. I tend to believe that they frequently do things like this, and quite often I think it's just for them to facilitate, you know, looting of antiquities. If there was something there that was cool from the 15th dynasty, and they just sell that off, and Wegner comes back, he's like, hey, where was that artifact? They're like, what artifact? I don't know. Now, again, that's me being a little cynical here, but something's up. There's no question. I mean, they're telling us that there was no freaking, there was only Egyptians that worked the site, for fuck's sake. Something is going on here as far as, all right, there's a cool pink door there. There is a cool pink altar there. But this is the thing to me that is really worth walking away from this whole mess with. We get a very skewed version of reality when it comes out of that Zahi Hawass Foundation for stealing shit from Egypt or whatever you want to call it, and the aptly named Egyptian Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities. Now, shouldn't that be archaeology and history? There's no money in archaeology and history, but tourism and antiquities? Now, I get told a lot that I just hate archaeologists, and that's simply not the case. Not only do I love the field of study, I find the vast majority of archaeologists, on YouTube even, to be fine people, interested in their specialty, and they're educational to listen to, although frequently dry. But these guys, they don't get traction. They get a few views compared to the mean-spirited debunkers that are aligned with them. And because of this, the good archaeologists, as I see them, are forced to have their data disseminated by the bad archaeologists, the Zahi Hawasses and Flint Dibbles of the world, the Ministries of Tourism and Antiquities. A clear financial incentive is existing here, and the dissemination of information is not being done properly. And we end up with these smoking gun kind of situations. Now, right now, the one that everybody's talking about is Zahi Hawass on the Joe Rogan Experience. And yes, I'm going to be covering that soon. It's not like this is my replacement for that or anything. I was already working on this, looking into it. And, imagine what I found. Once again, you put these gatekeepers in their position of gatekeepiness, and we get bullshit, man. We get told the most stupid things you could possibly imagine. Imagine if this was any other field of study and they were 1,000 years off. I mean, for fuck's sake. Like any other field of archaeology, excuse me. Like, imagine some dude talking about Roman history and he's like, oh, we're 1,000 years off on this artifact. It's like, are you kidding me, man? You better be talking about like ancient ass stone tools and nothing but ancient ass stone tools. No writing. No, this is so, this is insulting. It's insulting to people that are into this stuff. To the interested amateur, this is a slap in the face. So I don't hate archaeologists. As a matter of fact, I really think that in some weird way, I'm fighting for archaeologists because, in my opinion, it seems like the ones that are really doing good work are being filtered through some really shitty fucking filters, some really horrible outlets. And it's all about financial incentive. And I understand money makes the world go around. I'm not trying to, like, you know, we could all just kumbaya our way through life. If only we didn't have to eat, everything would be just fine. You know, but when you're talking about science and stuff, man, when it gets like that, you can't really say it's science and then, like, show financial motivations behind it. Like I bitch about all the time. If your motivations are anything other than discerning reality, you ain't doing science, man. I don't know what else to tell you. And if you let those other motivations seep in there, if you know what's happening and you let them seep in there, you're a fucking charlatan. I won't mince any words about that. Anyway, Zahi Hawass has been invited to the Cosmic Summit, which I'm going to be at. So if you want to be at the Cosmic Summit and see Zahi Hawass, he may or may not be there. I'll certainly be there. And then there's going to be all these other people that are certainly going to be there. Whole poster full of them right there, man. Some good people. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be on the stage, like, debating Atlantis stuff with Randall Carlson and Dr. Danny Nadiwajawa. Charlie, correct me on the pronunciation for the 1,000th time. Thanks for that. And there's going to be other people there, too. David Stig Hansen and I forget everybody who's going to be, but there's going to be a few people on stage. We're going to argue about Atlantis. We're going to argue politely. We're going to pretend that Flint was there and throw rocks at each other. Anyway, you should come to the Cosmic Summit. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, I really appreciate you guys staying this long and watching the video. I really don't know what to say about this. I wish that there was like some, as usual, I wish there was a better bow to tie up at the end of the video. But, dude, I don't know what to say, man. I'm so sick and tired of being lied to about the things that are important to me like this. This is just like a cool hobby to me. But it's like something that's also, I guess, our shared fucking heritage, man. And I can't even like... I can't even get a straight answer on a damn tomb of the 5th Dynasty Pharaoh's son or 15th Dynasty. Anyway, thanks for watching. Have a good night.